What's up, everybody? It's Mondo, aka Chunkletta Mongu, and this is episode 4 of We Talking About Games. Man, I'm excited because we got a back-to-back week's episodes, or episodes in back-to-back weeks. I was a little worried that I wasn't going to be able to get an episode in, but I was like, no, fuck that, we're getting an episode in. Also, well, I'm going to get into it in a little bit, but we recorded another episode, too, that hasn't aired, But yeah, happy Thursday. Today's April 18th. I don't know. It's been a good week in gaming. I feel like we've gotten some pretty great news. And I've had a pretty decent week myself. Which I guess that's a good segue into what I'm playing right now. I am currently playing Persona 5 Royale. I actually just put that down for a little bit. I'm really trying to beat this game before the summertime comes, man. And before I like dive into another RPG, which I'm doing next week. And I'm also playing Fallout 3 because, man, I finished watching the Fallout TV show over the last, it wasn't even over the last week. I binged that in like 2 days. The show was so good. And we're going to get into that later on in the show. But that's got me playing even more Fallout 3. And even considering starting Fallout 4 next week with some friends of mine who have played Fallout and are big Fallout fans. And they were like, yo, like let's restart. And since I've never played Fallout 4, I was like, okay, I'll just join y'all. Let's do this. So that's what I'm playing right now. And I haven't been playing too many games because I've been watching a lot of TV. If you haven't, I think I said this in my last episode. If you have not started watching X-Men 97, please go do that. Please do yourself a favor. Go do that. In the last week, I have binged and finished 3 different shows. I finished season 1 of Solo Leveling, which you should go watch that too. I read the manhwa of Solo Leveling, and it's gonna be a really good anime. That's all I gotta say. I don't want to say too much more. I finished the Fallout TV show, and today I finished season 2 of Invincible, which I'm not gonna lie to you, I thought it was really lackluster. Like, I finished it, and I was like, wait, they put a break somewhere in there? Like, no wonder people fell off from the show. I don't know. It wasn't whack, but it wasn't great either. And to think that they put a break somewhere in there, no wonder people weren't interested when it came back. Because I'm just imagining, where did you put a break that would have left people actually caring about coming back to watch it? I don't know. It was an okay season. That's all it was. It wasn't bad. Wasn't great either. So I finished those 3 shows, and I think I'm about to jump into Shogun because that's another show everybody's been telling me to watch, and I don't want that show to get to like a season finale and I start seeing spoilers on the timeline. Like, I've been seeing a picture of somebody floating around the internet today. And like, you know what? I'll just say this very small thing about spoilers. I don't really think that people understand what is actually a spoiler. Like, I think people understand that spoilers are just like, oh, like telling you what happened or like literally saying like one of the story beats or something like that. No, like quite literally everything is a spoiler. Like, me seeing this picture of this character floating around the internet today, that was in a way a spoiler because now I know that there's something big happening with this character. And now every time I see this person on screen, I'm going to think about that. I'm going to be sitting there waiting for it. I'm now anticipating something that I otherwise wouldn't have been anticipating. And then when it happens, instead of having a, oh my God, that's crazy moment, I'm just going to be like, oh wow, okay, so that's what happened. And for me, that's kind of whack. And so like, I think it's kind of whack. I don't know. I just think people just need to stop getting on the internet talking about TV shows in the way they do. And maybe I just need to stop going on the internet myself, because my God, the internet has really ruined watching television. And not just for me, I think it's ruined it for everybody. Like, I feel like week to week I'm seeing everybody like, oh God, like I saw a friend on a timeline mention like, oh shit, y'all can't wait until like people get home to like watch X-Men before you spoil it. Like, you really gotta spoil it at 11 o'clock in the morning on the day it comes out, as if people don't have jobs and don't have time to watch this in the next 8 hours. It's crazy. The internet is just bananas. I think YouTube culture around posting spoilers on thumbnails has gotten a little better, but man, was that just a sick time where you just get on YouTube refresh your home screen and see a spoiler in a thumbnail for a show. Anyways, that was my spoiler rant. Please stop spoiling stuff on the internet, guys. Anyways, speaking of YouTube, my YouTube updates are, I think I mentioned this on the last episode, that I was working on my Final Fantasy VII Rebirth review, or that I was going to record it. I officially recorded it. It's longer than I wish it was, but that's how much I had to say about it. So it is what it is. That's how long it's going to be. I'm currently editing it because I don't want it to just be a video of me talking. I kind of want to put in some gameplay and clips in there. So I'm finishing that up and hopefully going to put out that video soon. I might not put it out over the weekend. I might just save it for Monday. And then we'll do it then. I'm sorry, I lost track because I saw a response for somebody come in the Google form, and it's ridiculous. And I'm going to mention it later on in the show, but people are so ridiculous. Anyways, and I think I know exactly who this person is. So let's just dive into what we're going to talk about today. I want to talk about, oh man, the Fallout TV show for sure. Just my high-level review of the show. I definitely want to record a separate episode, and I was talking to the homie Patrick from Spotlight Games podcast. Hopefully he'll come on and we'll talk about it in depth. But I want to talk about that a little bit. I want to talk about PlayStation features like trophies and crossplay and friends lists and other things coming to PC with Ghost of Tsushima, which is bananas. I can't believe we're living in a time when emulators are coming to the iPhone officially. But before we get into any of those things, I definitely want to start off with this PS5 Pro and the specs for it apparently being official. Like somebody, Tom Warren from The Verge, getting his hands on some official documents that kind of solidify the leaks that we've heard over the past couple of weeks about it. And I actually have a Google form submission about this one. So I'm gonna start off with the Google submission. I'll read a little bit about the specs and then I'll dive into it. So the homie Jordan, aka Cognitive Clips, says, Jordan, aka Cognitive Clips here. As I'm writing this, there has been a lot. There has not been an official announcement about the PS5 Pro, but there have been some credible leaks about stats and the likely price point. How are you feeling about a mid-gen refresh? Personally, I think we're starting to see diminishing returns with how much better the tech can be after only 4 years on the market, but I'd like to hear your take. I think this is also a good time to mention the other submission I got into the box like literally a few minutes ago, which is, quote-unquote, hair loss in video games, LMAO. This is what this person wants me to talk about, and I know who this person is, and I'm not even going to mention their name. They don't deserve to be mentioned. Ridiculous. Hair loss. Thanks. I know. I'm losing hair. Welcome to the 30s. Blame my dad. Anyways, so I'm going to get into some official statements from Tom Warren on this, reading it from his article. And he says, Sony is getting ready to release a more powerful PS5 console, possibly by the end of this year. After reports of elite PS5 Pro specifications surfaced recently, The Verge has obtained a full list of specs for the upcoming console. Ooh. Sources familiar with Sony's plans tell me that developers are already being asked to ensure their games are compatible with this upcoming console, with a focus on improving ray tracing, of all things. Codenamed Trinity, the PlayStation 5 Pro model will include a more powerful GPU and a slightly faster CPU mode. All of Sony's changes point to a PS5 Pro that will be far more capable of rendering games with ray tracing enabled and hitting higher resolutions and frame rates in certain titles. Sony appears to be encouraging developers to use graphic features like ray tracing more with the PS5 Pro, with games able to use Trinity Enhanced, quote unquote, which I guess is going to be PS5 Pro Enhanced, label if they provide significant enhancements. Sony expects GPU rendering on the PS5 Pro to be about 45% faster than the standard PS5, according to documents outlining the upcoming console. The PS5 Pro GPU will be larger and faster, and use faster system memory to help improve ray tracing in games. Sony is also using a quote-unquote more powerful ray tracing architecture in the PS5 Pro, where the speed here is up to 3 times better than the regular PS5. While Sony is improving the GPU side of the PS5 Pro, the CPU side will be the same as the standard PS5, but with a mode that clocks it higher. Trinity, crazy, consoles are getting overclocking, which PCs have had forever. That's bananas. Trinity has a mode that targets 3.85 gigahertz CPU frequency, says Sony in a document to developers. That's around 10% more than the regular PS5. Sony will offer developers the ability to pick between a standard mode at 3.5 or a higher CPU or the quote unquote high CPU frequency mode at 3.85. That's just fancy stuff. I guess that translates to 10%. That's not a 10%. No, that is a 10% increase. Yeah, that is. Actually, I'm sorry. The increase in memory speed and allocations may be useful for Sony's new PlayStation Spectral Super Resolution, PSSR, support. This is essentially Sony's upscaling answer to NVIDIA's DLSS or AMD's FSR to improve frame rates and image quality on PlayStation. Sony has built a quote-unquote custom architecture for machine learning on the PS5 Pro, which supports 300 TOPS of 8-bit computing. I don't know what 300 TOPS is. I'm not going to lie to you. I feel like I have to Google that now. What are TOPS? But yeah, so from what I just read, what is TOPS? It means trillions or tera operations per second. Huh, okay. It is primarily a measure of the maximum achievable throughput, but not a measure of actual throughput. Oh, okay. So it's technically, not literally. That's interesting. And so, yeah, so Jordan wrote in and, you know, just to repeat what he said, I think we're starting to see diminishing returns with how much better the tech can be after only 4 years on the market. But I'd like to hear your take. And so, I gotta say, I completely agree with Jordan on the, we're getting into the principle of diminishing returns. Like, we are definitely for the 45% more that we're putting in, we are not getting the same kind of improvement that we were getting 45% before. And you know, I think the law of diminishing returns. I think that not only applies to what we're going to see graphically in games, like, yeah, you know, like, we are getting into diminishing returns for, you know, how much money something costs and what we're getting out of it. You know, you can say that about, like PCs, you know, like, the price difference between a 4070 and a 4090 is steep, but, like, is the return worth the amount of money that it costs to get that 4090? I say 4070, but even like a 4080 to a 4090, that price jump is still incredibly high, but the improvement is just like 10%. Like, you're paying several hundred dollars to get better performance, but not much better performance. And I really do think that we're like entering that area with like video games. And so, like, yeah, I wonder what it's gonna cost. In my head, I don't think they're going to lower the cost of the PlayStation 5 Slim and the regular PS5. Not in this economy. And if they don't, that means I think a PS4 Pro, even if they do, I feel like a PS5 Pro comes in at like $600. Does it come in at $700? You know, like, I don't see most people who have a PS5 feeling the need to get this. You know, and there's a lot of talk around... This is probably a product that is more geared towards the enthusiasts, one, but then also people who don't even have a PS5 and sitting there saying, oh, I'm going to go and get the better PS5. I'm not too sure about that. Like, I'm not too sure that the casual gamer would care to pay $100, $200 more for better graphics, you know? Like, maybe higher frames, I think that's a great selling point. But a couple hundred dollars to play the same games, like, oh, all right, it's still going to play the same games. You're just going to look a little better on this one. Now, I'm not sure how many people are going to lean towards that. Me personally, as much of a tech enthusiast as I am, as much of a Sony fan as I am, I'm not getting a PS5 Pro. I just don't care. Like, First of all, I play too many of my games that I would like a high FPS, like shooters. I play all of those on my PC. And I'm finding myself more and more just playing more games on my PC. Even investing more in that ecosystem, because I also have a Steam Deck. So if the title is Steam Deck verified, I'm more than likely probably going to get it from my PC, because I now have two places I can play it natively. Unlike, you know, like PlayStation does have the portal, but that's not a native device. I can't take that on the go with me and use it on the train where I'd have no service and stuff like that. And so buying something on PC inherently has more value for me, because I'm getting more bang for my buck. But like back to like the diminishing returns thing, I think, yeah, we're getting into like diminishing returns and like how much more of an improvement in graphics we're getting for cost and like hardware parts. But I also think it's a diminishing return in how much we're actually enjoying the video game. And like, this is kind of why like I'm not a graphics whore. Like, I come from a time where I played 8-bit, 16-bit, 32, 64-bit video games. You know, like video games that had jagged polygons. And those are, still to this date, some of the best video games I've ever played. Because more than anything else, I want a game to be fun. I want it to be entertaining. I want it to be enjoyable. And I'd be lying if I said that graphics improving have not made games more enjoyable. No, they have. 100% they have. Like, see, I just finished playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and I did a review on it, and I talk about how much the graphics have immersed me in that world and brought this world that I love so much to life, and how much that is a big deal of why I like that game. But it is not why I like that game. And if I had to say out of 100%, how much graphics has to do with how much I like a game, it is like 5%. 10% max. And I'm talking like Rebirth is hitting that 10%. And not even so much because it looks great, but because it's recreating a game that was on the PlayStation 1. And so like part of the enjoyment is seeing this open world that was in the PlayStation 1 that was basically just flat land, pixelated trees that depicted forests and stuff like that, and seeing that being transformed into something new. But I'm not sure how much graphics is adding to my enjoyment of a game today, like a brand new IP I've never played before. How much is graphics really helping me enjoy that game? And PS1 to PS5 is a huge jump, but like PS4 to PS5, like 1080p to 4K, ray tracing and no ray tracing, how much is that really adding to your enjoyment of a video game? And like, my opinion on that is that it's not adding much enjoyment outside of like that initial when you start the game and, you know, the world opens up and you really start to see, like, you know, like say Cyberpunk, when you first get to that city, that open city view, and you get that initial like, oh wow, that looks beautiful. That lasts like 10 seconds. And then that, wow, that's beautiful moment is over. And you're back to playing a video game. And for me, whether I'm playing Cyberpunk in 1080p or 4K with ray tracing and all the bells and whistles, I think I'm going to have the same amount of fun. And yeah, I might have a few less, oh wow, that's gorgeous moments playing it in 1080p, no ray tracing, but I'm going to still have the same amount of fun. It's the same game. Like, literally, it's the same game. And so, you know, I think what I see here with hearing that, okay, the GPU is going to have a 45% faster, it's going to be 45% faster than the regular PS5, but the CPU is only getting a 10% bump. And that's only because they're overclocking it. That's not even because the CPU is actually improved. They're just adding a mode and adding the function to overclock the CPU. All that tells me is that the games aren't going to be improving. You know, like, I'm coming off of playing Dragon's Dogma 2 last month, and a lot of the talk around that game was how poorly it performed, even on a very high-end computer that had a 4090, all the bells and whistles, yada yada. And it is because it is a CPU-bound game. Like, yeah, for all the graphics and everything that that's worth, the game itself is doing a lot. The game itself, when you go into a city, there are so many characters that are not just regular NPCs. There's so much going on in the world, like it's alive in a way. And that helps with that sort of sense of immersion that that game has, which in my opinion is one of the best things about that game. All I hear when I hear that the CPU isn't improving that much is that the limits of what games can do has not risen at all. We're about to get another console that isn't going to do anything to raise the bar of what a game can do. And what a game can do is really bound by the CPU. You know, it's kind of crazy that like even high-end PCs couldn't handle it. That's an optimization issue, in my opinion. But it still gets into that water of like, we still have a cap for as far as what a game can do, how many systems a game can have running, how many mechanics a game can add to make a world more immersive, add elements to a game that make a world feel alive. You know, like even going back to Cyberpunk again, I feel like I use Cyberpunk as an example so much, but it's a good example in different ways. You know, that game was being hyped up for so long, and the way the game was sold to us in this way of like, this world's going to be alive, like characters are going to have their own lives and night and day cycle and all this stuff. That is CPU bound stuff. And so when the game eventually comes out, and instead of being this new transformative RPG, it ends up being a pretty standard RPG that just looks incredible. I wonder how much of that is due to the inability that consoles have to do more. And so I think it's kind of whatever to hear that games are going to look better than they already look, because I think that they already look incredible. And, you know, I just want to say, I don't want my games to look real. I don't want my games to look like real life. I'm not interested in that personally. And I think where we are right now, not even with a PS5 Pro, I am more than happy with how games look. I don't even know how anybody could argue that they're not incredibly satisfied with how games look right now. And, you know, you hear people constantly talk about how like, oh yeah, you know, the frame rate's dropping and, you know, the grass is popping in and, you know, the draw distance isn't great in the game. Well, maybe if we stopped stacking new graphical elements in games and settled for where games are, and it's not even settling, it's just, you know, agreeing on a standard that we're just going to move forward with at least for 5-10 years. Like, how are we just not happy with where games are? It's beyond me. And so for me, it's like, we need to like agree on that, because once we agree on that, then we can start focusing on how we can actually make games better. You know, like, especially being somebody who's an RPG fan, what can we do to consoles? What can we do for games, for engines, things of that nature, that will make the games themselves, the gameplay itself — gameplay is king — what are we going to do to make the gameplay itself better? You know, I feel like that's where we need to focus our energy. And so this is cool to hear, I guess, on some level. You know, shout out to everybody who's going to get one. You know, whenever it does come out, maybe I'll bring somebody on who got one and they can comment on it, because I'm just not interested to spend $500, at least $500, potentially upwards of $600+ on a PS5 Pro. I could go and spend that much money, and I am going to very soon. I'm going to spend that much money on a 4070, 4080, to get improved, and I don't have to do anything else to my computer, because everything else in my computer is just fine. I'm gonna go spend that much money to get a 4070 in my PC, and I'm gonna be able to do more than the PS5 Pro is gonna do. And so, like, that's my other thing with just me as a PC owner. It doesn't make sense to me to buy a PS. It doesn't make sense for me to buy a PS5 Pro. And so that's kind of where I stand on that. I appreciate you chiming in, Jordan. Thanks for joining the conversation. But to keep things in the realm of PlayStation, this is something. Oh, PlayStation and PC. This is something that intrigued the hell out of me when I saw it on the timeline. Ghost of Tsushima Director's Cut is coming to PC next month on May 16th, and it's bringing new PlayStation features to the PC. And not new as in they don't exist to PlayStation, but they've never existed on the PC. And so I'm going to read a blog post from PlayStation blog. It's titled Ghost of Tsushima Director's Cut, PC Crossplay and System Requirements Revealed. We're not going to get into the system requirements. I don't think that's too important. That's nerdy stuff. But they say, as we previously announced, Ghost of Tsushima Director's Cut on PC contains the full game, the Iki Island expansion, and the cooperative online multiplayer Legends mode. Legends mode is awesome. If you haven't played it, highly recommend. Thanks to crossplay support, Legends players on Windows PCs can team up with players on both PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5 consoles and use in-game voice chat to communicate. You will be required to sign into your PlayStation Network account to access Legends mode. I missed the earlier part. I don't know why it's highlighted weirdly like this. But it starts off saying, hey everyone, Ghost of Tsushima Director's Cut is coming to PC on May 16th. Today we're giving you all the details on crossplay support and Legends mode and the inclusion of a new PlayStation overlay with support for PlayStation trophies and more. And then it's that part that I just read. Then it continues, Ghost of Tsushima Director's Cut is the first PlayStation title on PC that uses the new PlayStation overlay, which includes your friends list, trophies, settings, and your profile. This feature is available on Windows PCs and will be accessible from the in-game menu or the keyboard, or for keyboard players by pressing Shift F1 shortcut on your keyboard. That's actually three keys for me because I have to use the FN key to use my F keys. Blech. While playing the game, you can earn PlayStation trophies just like on PlayStation consoles. Ghost of Tsushima's Director's Cut on PC shares the same trophy set as the game on PlayStation 5 consoles. And they have an asterisk there, which means I believe if you have the game on PS4, it does not share the trophies. I'm going to scroll down to see what the asterisk is for. In addition, the PC version also has full support for achievements on Steam and the Epic Store. That's pretty cool too, actually. That is doing both. To make use of the features like trophies, friends list, and crossplay, you can sign in with your existing PlayStation Network account, or create a new one. The use of the PlayStation overlay is optional for both the single player experience and Legends mode. Man, goodness gracious! And then they kind of get into the requirements that you need for the game to play it on PC, and to play it on very high, which is 4K at 60 frames per second. I think this is the only thing that's worth mentioning. To play it at 4K at 60 frames per second, you need an NVIDIA GeForce RTX 4080 or an AMD Radeon RX 7900 XT, which they are both like $1,000 GPUs. And this is why I kind of think it's a joke that people think that they're going to get 4K 60 frames on the PS5 Pro. That's not happening, dog. Maybe with that PSSR, you know, AI frame generating technology, but I even think with that, it's going to be a stretch. And just to scroll down to see what the asterisk is for, the asterisk for that PS5 trophies thing is users who connect their existing PlayStation account, PlayStation Network, and users who connect their existing account for PlayStation Network and unlocked trophies for Ghost of Tsushima's Director's Cut using the same account on PS5 will have the same trophies unlocked on the PC version. Okay, that's what the asterisk is for. So it's kind of saying, like, if you already had trophies unlocked, it'll be unlocked on the PC version. But it does not say PS4. And so I do think that that's a stipulation. I do think if you had it, if you played it on PS4, and you don't have the PS5 version of the game, like I have the PS4 version of Ghost of Tsushima, I'm assuming that this means my trophies are not going to transfer over. And I would have to re-earn all my trophies. I'm not getting this on PC because I already own the game, but that kind of sucks. I'm not going to lie. You know, it's just nice to pop trophies somewhere else, right? But yeah, yo. So, you know, cool. Ghost of Tsushima Director's Cut is coming to PC. Another PlayStation game coming to PC. I think when this news came out, PlayStation has like a banner that like says only on PlayStation, like a marketing banner that they made, and it's a bunch of games on there. God of War, Spider-Man, Horizon, a few others, Returnal was on there, and Ghost of Tsushima was on there. And officially, beginning next month, all of those games that were quote-unquote only on PlayStation are now no longer only on PlayStation. They are actually all on PC now. And one, that's interesting, that's cool. But I think this evolution of the PC experience around PlayStation games with this optional overlay, including trophy support, which is huge, 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 huge. Having your friends list, having other settings and access to your profile. I'm not sure what that means yet, but they got a few pictures here, but I don't think any of them really delve into it like that. You know, I think, you know, you see your settings, you can see your profile, but I don't know what like settings are. You know what I mean? Like, I opened my PlayStation 5 settings and it's like actual settings for my PS5. So like, what settings are we talking about that actually matter in a PlayStation sense for the PC? I guess we'll see in due time when Ghost of Tsushima comes out. But I think that is such a massive step in what I think is eventually going to happen, which is PlayStation games coming day and date to PC. Like first party, third party partnerships, like, you know, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, all of that stuff coming to PC day and date. Because something like this is absolutely required. If you're gonna do the day and date, I think trophy support, friends lists, cross play, things like this absolutely matter to the experience of bringing these games to this platform day and date. You know, and when you look at the success that a game like Helldivers had, which wasn't even a massive IP, and is now, I think, a big IP because of the success that game had. The big part of that success was the fact that it also came out on PC, and that drove the game's interest. The fact that it came out on Steam, and we have a website like SteamDB that gives us updated numbers on how many people are playing this game at the moment. You can't do that for PlayStation, right? So we don't even know how many people are playing on PlayStation, but having this number for Steam and being able to compare that to other games, seeing where it stacks up in the rank of concurrent players, that added to the zeitgeist of that game. That matters. That is a marketing thing. That mattered. That helped drive that game. And PlayStation would be stupid. I mean, they would be absolute fucking idiots to not look at that and say, to look at that and say, yeah, you know what? We're not going to replicate that. We're going to do day and date on PlayStation, and then we'll bring it to PC a year later. Because if you've seen how that has worked out, it hasn't really worked out for them a lot. Like, yeah, God of War, Spider-Man, Horizon, Returnal, yeah, those games sold. But when you're pulled away from that zeitgeist of being in the moment of release, you know, that massive FOMO feeling that video gamers feel when a game comes out and they're not part of the conversation, that shit drives sales, man. Gamers are prisoners of FOMO. I forget what it's called. I'd have to look it up in my ChatGPT conversation. But I forget what it's called. Man, I wish I could find it. But it's a law. It's a principle of like selling, and we are a prisoner of that. The scarcity effect. Go and Google that. Gamers are a prisoner of the scarcity effect of this idea of like something that is exclusive matters more. We are prisoners of FOMO. Like, we hate being left out of the conversation. That's why a lot of people buy games day and date. Like, that's why I told myself recently, I'm not buying games day and date anymore, because I would buy them day and date to be part of the conversation. But in the end, I would lose because I'm either juggling too many games now, I'm spending more money than I need to on a game because eventually it'll be on sale. It's a whole bunch of stuff that gets into it. But like, gamers are massive prisoners of that. And so PlayStation would be stupid to not take advantage of the scarcity effect and bring PC gamers into that bubble. And so I think this is just another baby step to bringing PlayStation games day one on PC. I'm even seeing the fanboys on Twitter. Dude's hosting 5, 6, 7 hour long spaces on Twitter talking about this during work hours. Makes my head numb, man. Oh my God. I can understand doing that stuff during the pandemic, but like even now, kind of nonsensical to me. But I'm starting to see the flagpole. I'm starting to see the goalpost move of like, oh, games are never coming to PC, to like now it's going to come out in a launcher, or like now this idea that PlayStation has this grand scheme, when before they used to talk about how PlayStation's never going to do this. Oh, that never going to do this thing is gone now. Oh, the conversation's changing a whole lot now. And I love it. I love it. If I never have to buy another PlayStation again, I won't be mad at it. I'm a fan of their games. I'm not a fan of hardware. I'm a gamer. I'm not a consoler. Not a counselor. I'm not a consoler. I don't play consoles. I play games. And so if these games come to PC, I will be playing them on PC day one. If they don't come day one, the games that I'm interested in playing day one, like say a Rebirth or something like that, I'm gonna buy it on PS5. It is what it is. I'm not waiting a year to play it. By the same time, I would buy that damn thing day one on PC. That's for damn sure. And play it at true 4K 60 frames. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Anyways. So that's it for PlayStation news. We're looking forward to seeing how Ghost of Tsushima looks and feels. I hope it's a very good port. Nexus has been really good. Nexus, their PC porting studio, has been really good at porting games over to PC. So I expect nothing less from them, and very much looking forward to seeing how that game is going to perform, even though I'm not playing it on PC. But moving on from that, I want to briefly get into the Fallout series, TV series, and the success that has come from that series, both for the show and for the games. So unless you've been living under a rock, you've probably heard that Fallout, the game series, has a TV show on Amazon Prime. It's 8 episodes, and it's not a retelling of any of the Fallout games stories, but it takes place in that universe. The show is canon to the overall Fallout TV show. And, I mean, my review of that show is that it is phenomenal. I watched the first few minutes, and I was hooked. They had me hook, line, sinker from the first 10 minutes of that show. And I couldn't stop watching it. Like, once I finished an episode, I was like, damn. I need to watch the next episode. And I was so upset when it was all finally over. Because, man, I want some more Fallout TV show. I'm not going to lie to you. It sucks that we're probably going to have to wait 2 years for that show to come back around, because that's the cycle of good television nowadays. And so just a high-level overview, because I don't want to get into too much of, like, even saying who my favorite character is or anything like that. Because, again, kind of what I was saying earlier in the show, there's a whole lot of different things that apply as spoilers, so I don't want to spoil anything by even saying who I like or anything, but the show mostly follows three main characters in Lucy McClane, the Ghoul, and Maximus, who is part of the Brotherhood, the Silver Brotherhood. Oh my God, it's leaving my mind right now. But he's part of one of the factions from Fallout. And the story mostly follows those three, with, you know, hints there here and there going to like side characters and stuff. And all these characters are likable in their own right. And I think they're in some ways maybe dislikable, except for like one of the characters. I think everybody's kind of behind one of these characters in a big way. The acting is just great, and the world building. I'm someone who only has about 10-ish hours into Fallout 3, and 5 of those I put in after starting the Fallout show. So like before starting the show, I'd played Fallout 3 for like maybe 2 hours, and I really wasn't feeling the game. I think I was playing it at the wrong pace. I've since then sort of restructured how I'm playing it, and I'm enjoying it much more. But even in those few hours I'd put in before starting the show, I got enough of that world building. I got enough of the Easter eggs and things like that to enjoy this show as a moderate fan. I haven't gotten to any factions in the game, so that stuff is new to me from the show. And, you know, I have some close friends who are big Fallout fans, and they've loved the show so far, appreciating everything that it's done for someone who is a fan of the show. A lot of what people are saying in regard to the show, like, yeah, the show is great, but people are also saying that it is the best video game adaptation ever. And I think I said in my previous episode, before I even watched it, again, I'm not sure that people are saying it's a better show than The Last of Us, but there's nothing very video gamey about The Last of Us. It is very much grounded in realism. Like, The Last of Us is something, I don't want to say something that could happen, but like, if there were ever zombies or quote unquote clickers in the real world, that's pretty much what it would look like. Like, that's exactly how it would be. Fallout's world is very unrealistic. It's not based in reality. It is a video game, and it very much feels that way, especially if you've put in any time into the video games itself. And so I feel like for that, like, yeah, no, this is the best video game adaptation ever, period, point blank, period. And I think whoever's trying to recreate a video game into a show, into a movie, you could take some notes. Like, you could really learn a lot from what they've done. And so the world building was just incredible. And as somebody who doesn't have a lot of time into Fallout, I'm currently playing Fallout 3. Those friends of mine who are really into Fallout 4, we were talking the other day, and we're actually going to all start Fallout 4 again when the next gen update comes out next week on the 25th. It's Steam Deck Verified, which I'm super hype about that, because now that's going to be my commute game. And so we're all going to get on this Fallout 4 journey together. And yeah, man, like, when I told my friend who has 200 hours in Fallout 3 and just about the same in Fallout 4, he was like, yo, if you never played the game, you're not going to appreciate this show the way it can be appreciated. And my response to him was like, I 100% feel that. And, you know, for all it's worth of what I've already played and know about the game, and I've enjoyed the show as much as I have because of that, I'm hoping the show does the inverse for me, where it makes me appreciate the game even more. Like, I hope I jump into Fallout 4, dive deeper into Fallout 3, and I'm like, oh, that's why that was in the show. Like, I hope I have those moments when I play the game now. And I'm sure a lot of people who have never played Fallout and are being introduced to that world and through the show for the first time, I'm sure a lot of them are going to also have those same feelings. I wonder if y'all can hear the garbage guys outside collecting recycling right now, because I can, and it's bothering me. And I guess something to mention, because I said this show is canon, I don't know what it is people are talking about in the show, but I've seen some worry about Fallout New Vegas no longer being canon. But Todd Howard, who made this game, this is his baby, said that Fallout New Vegas is still canon. So whoever cares about that, it apparently is still canon. I'm not sure why people thought it wasn't canon. I didn't read any of those articles because I don't want the game spoiled for me or anything like that. I saw it. I saw the headline. That was enough for me. But enough about the success of the show. That's also led to further success of the game, right? Like, I think that's a big reason why The Last of Us has a TV show. That's why Fallout has a TV show now. Because they're trying to grab another audience of people who have not played these games and get them to play them. And Fallout, it worked to a T. So just to talk about some things, Fallout 4 and 76, which are the most recent Fallout games, are ranked 4th and 5th respectively on the Steam sales charts. Another reason why Steam is awesome, because you can see that information for what it is. As far as like tracking game sales, concurrent players, things of that nature, Fallout 4 is currently the best-selling game in Europe right now, jumping a whopping 7,400% week over week. And yeah, you know, like, how much could it have possibly been selling a week ago? You know, like, is it that big a jump? I think that's still a massive jump. You see that number and, like, that's huge. The show did that. And I wonder how much that's still going to, like, have an effect. Like, I got to go out and buy Fallout 4 on Steam. Probably going to do it after this show before the sale ends. So I haven't bought the game yet. Haven't bought another Fallout game yet. And I've already watched the show. So I imagine some of these sales are still going to come after the fact, right? Not everybody has binged the show in a few days, the first week, like I have. And so what's going to happen over the course of the next few months when people start watching that, when people who've added it to their list and like, yeah, I'm going to get to that eventually. Those people are also probably going to buy the game, right? Like, so this is just 7,400% increase from people who were eager to watch the show in its first week. And that says a lot. That says a bunch of, that says a lot about its success and what the show's doing for the game sales. Concurrent player counts on SteamDB are higher than they've been in years for all the games, including 1 and 2, which are not the, like, favored games of the series, particularly because they're, like, made in different styles, I think. And, you know, like, the beloved games, like, 3, 4, and New Vegas, those are seeing massively high concurrent counts compared to recent months and years. And that's huge. A lot of people have been talking about how Fallout 76, which had a terrible launch, is no longer bad. And everybody who is either jumping into it anew right now or re-jumping into it who had a bad experience in the beginning are saying, yo, y'all need to jump into this. Like, this game is not what you thought it was before. Like, this game is great. And that's awesome. Like, again, it's having its No Man's Sky moment. It's seen success, and that's cool. It's great. And nobody wants to see a game do bad. Nobody wants to play a bad game. And so to hear that a game that was once bad is now good is always awesome. And yeah, so, like, I don't know. I mean, that's all I want to say about the show. I don't want to get too deep into it. I'm probably going to get into this stuff again when I do the actual Fallout review episode. But, man, yo, if you haven't watched the show, I highly, highly recommend that you move that up your watch list. Unless you got some stuff like Shogun at the top. That's the next show I gotta jump into. Or even Solo Leveling. Yeah, I gotta watch. Oh man, there's so much good TV happening right now. And we haven't even gotten to June when Game of Thrones comes back. I can't even believe I'm watching Game of Thrones anymore. But it's so good. It's so good. The Boys comes back in June. There's something else that comes back in June that slipping my tongue right now. There's three massive shows coming out in June again. It's a good spring summer for TV right now. That's for sure. And so that's it for Fallout TV shows and games. Go buy a new Fallout game. Go watch the show. But last thing I want to get into is probably the thing that is exciting me the most, because I cannot believe how far we have come, man. Emulators are officially coming to the iPhone. And so I'm going to read an article from Emma Roth on The Verge titled Apple Opens Up the App Store to Retro Game Emulators. And subline, game emulators have long been banned on the App Store, and they were one of the big reasons users in Europe might seek out a third-party marketplace. This is a big reason why a lot of people found themselves going to get an Android phone, because of that open source nature of that phone and the things you were able to do with those phones that you couldn't do on an iPhone. And, you know, Apple's slowly but surely made changes like, oh, yeah, you can edit your keyboard now. You can add themes. You got this and that. We have widgets now and stuff. And, like, you know, yeah, that stuff has come. I don't think most iPhone users ever really cared about that stuff. I wonder how many Android users they've really grabbed with that stuff. But emulators being officially in the official iPhone, like being in the App Store itself. Like, let me pull this up, show it on camera. This is an app I have that, because this is my second iPhone. I'm currently recording on my actual iPhone. This is the Delta app. If you notice, if I press it, it says Delta is no longer available. That's because that is a version of Delta I downloaded from, like, the web. I didn't have to fully jailbreak my phone to do that, But that's how I got that app. Now, if I go, oh my God, I just downloaded this app. Where is it? Now, when I go to the Delta I actually just downloaded, oh, it opens. Because I downloaded that from the actual Apple Store. That's on the store. How far have we come? Holy shit. I remember the days of like jailbreaking my iPhone just so that I could put emulators on my iPhone, itching every time a new phone came out. And I was like, all right, cool. Like the last iPhone, I could only put up to SNES or N64 on there. Like, is when the new iPhone coming out, am I going to be able to put PS1 on there? Am I going to be able to put PS2 on there? And that was a big, big reason why people used to jailbreak their phones. And you telling me we don't even got to do that no more? You can just jump on the App Store and download it? Anyways, let me read from this article on The Verge. It says, Apple is loosening up its App Store restrictions and opening the marketplace up to retro game emulators. In an update on Friday, Apple announced that game emulators can come to the App Store globally and offer downloadable games. Apple says that those games must comply with, quote-unquote, all applicable laws, though, an indication it will ban apps that provide pirated titles, which makes sense. And so, the move should allow the retro console emulators already on Android, at least those that are left, to bring their apps to the iPhone. Game emulators have long been banned from iOS, leaving iPhone owners in search of workarounds via jailbreaking or other workarounds. Yeah, I know. I've done everything under the sun to play Pokemon on my phone. They're also one of the key reasons so far that iPhone owners in the European Union might check out third-party app stores now that they're allowed in the region, which is interesting, right? Like, Apple's always been a one marketplace place. And the EU's like, yeah, nah, we're not doing that no more. You have to let people choose where they can buy stuff, which is another massive change. Can't wait till that really becomes official here in the United States. Apple's change today could head that off. Alongside the new rules on emulators, Apple also updated its rules around super apps such as WeChat. It now says that mini games and mini game apps within these apps must use HTML5, clarifying that they can't be native apps and games. That's really interesting. The change seems to come in response to the antitrust lawsuit filed by the United States, which accuses Apple of attempting to stomp out both cloud game streaming apps and super apps. Apple recently started letting cloud streaming services like Xbox Cloud Gaming and GeForce Now onto the App Store. And it gets into some other stuff just about like the legalities of everything going on around all that stuff. But man, yo, what a massive, massive shift in like where we are currently with video games and on mobile, you know, like, sometime late last year, the announcement of like Resident Evil 4 coming to the iPhone, that being massive. Like for me, that is massive because it's showing where the hardware is going and where some of that attention is going, right? Like, I don't think they make that game on the iPhone if they don't know that there's an audience that is interested in doing that stuff on their phone, right? And so, you know, to think that I now have this Delta emulator app, I have a folder full of ROMs, and I was mostly putting those on my Steam Deck. But, like, my Steam Deck is kind of big, and I don't want to always carry that in my book bag. Sometimes it just doesn't fit with some of the things that I have in there. You telling me now I could just take my Backbone, which I have a case for too, which is much smaller than my Steam Deck case, like half the size of my Steam Deck case. I can carry that with me, strap that baby on, and I can play Game Boy games, N64 games, PS1 games possibly, natively on my phone? Oh, man. It is not an understatement when I say this is a dream come true. Like, again, I was somebody who would jailbreak my phone specifically just to do this. And for it to be an app that I downloaded in less than a minute from the official Apple App Store, which means that not only is it easy for me to install, you know, when you jailbreak your phone and you do all these other workarounds, not only are they time consuming, but you also they're not reliable. You know, like I remember one of the ones I did on my phone, if I didn't use it for like 2 weeks, which happened one time, right? Like, you know, like you'll have an app, like you might use it for a couple weeks straight and then take a break for a month or two. I couldn't do that. You had to literally get on the app like every 2 weeks for it to refresh. And if you didn't, you had to do the whole initial process again, all over again, to get it to work. And then with stuff like that, like you're never sure, like, oh, if I do it all over again from the jump, am I going to lose my save data? Like, what's going to happen here? What's going to happen there? Like, no, it being on the App Store gives me the confidence that that app's going to work now. There are no workarounds. I don't want to say no, but there are probably much fewer incidents that can happen around my save files, around whether these ROMs are going to work, things of that nature. And that is incredible. And so, you know, in a world where Nintendo just sued the living daylights out of the people who made the Nintendo Switch emulator, this, for me, is massive. This, especially like a big company like Apple saying, yeah, you know what? We're going to let emulators be on the store. Because don't get me wrong, I know that they've always been on Android. But again, Android's always been an open source platform. It's a lot of that stuff is there because it's not unregulated, but that is sort of how it feels. It's kind of like the Wild Wild West. Like, you know, like, that's why, like, for all the apps that you could get on Android, there was also always this underlying, like, tone of, like, yeah, but, you know, like, still be careful of what you download, though, because, like, you know, like, everything is there, but you don't know how good or reliable it is. And so, for Apple to jump into the fray, especially, you know, Apple, if, for people who use their Android devices like that, those are techie people. I don't really think that that's a large base of like casual folks. Now for Apple, who is, I feel like the large base of their phone users are very casual people, to have access to something like this, that's massive. And I really do wonder how Nintendo feels about this. I'm not sure that they can really do anything about it, because if Apple's putting it on there, it must be, you know, the stat. It must be kosher. It must be good to go. You know, there must not be any holes in this, so to speak. And so, probably not tonight because it's already a little late, and I gotta finish up this episode. Make sure it goes up tomorrow morning. But tomorrow, when I'm working from home, oh, you best believe I'm putting some ROMs on my bad boy. I gotta test this out, and I'll have that verdict next week's episode. But man, oh man, am I excited to play Nintendo games on my iPhone officially, with no workarounds, with less worry about what's gonna happen. Man, what a time to be alive. If I went back in time and told 2009 Mondo this, who was jailbreaking his iPhone 3GS, that, yo, one day this is gonna be just available on your phone for you to play on a phone that has a bigger screen and a better processor, and you're gonna have a remote control that just straps to your phone that you can easily carry with you anywhere and play them like that, he would smack the shit out of me. And he'd say, man, stop fucking lying to me. I'm busy jailbreaking my phone. Oh my God. Wow. What a time to be alive. What a time to be alive. What a time to be a gamer, more importantly. But that's the last piece of big news that I wanna get into and talk about deeply. But I definitely wanna get into a few honorable mentions. This is another thing we're just going to add to the show, because I think I want to talk about 3-4 main topics on the show, but then there's definitely a lot of cool stuff or interesting stuff that happened throughout the week that are worth mentioning. And so, honorable mentions, we're going to start off with the most important one. Wow, when I saw this news on Twitter, got me kind of excited. Keanu Reeves is going to be Shadow in the Sonic 3 movie. What the fuck? Holy shit, man. Talk about a cast. Again, not getting into it, but that's huge news. Take-Two, which is the studio, which is the publisher that owns Rockstar, 2K, and others, is cutting 5% of its staff. That news to me is kind of mind-boggling, because they're about to put out a game next year in Grand Theft Auto 6 that is going to make billions of dollars in just a week. And that's off of like just initial sales. That's not even off of selling RP or none of this stuff on the back end, they're going to make billions with a B, billions, and they're cutting staff? Nah, bro. Gaming is what a time to be a gamer, but the gaming industry is in quite a rough spot, man. If Take-Two is cutting staff. The next one is It Takes Two studio, Hazelight, says that it's announcing new stuff, quote-unquote new stuff, later this year. And that's kind of exciting. If you've never played It Takes Two, it's a great, great co-op game. It's a co-op game. You have to have two people to play it. I've been playing it with my wife, and I cannot believe that I'm still saying that we have not beat the game. It is because we just haven't gone back to it. And it's tough when we go back to it because you forget the controllers, and obviously that's not a big deal to me, but my wife's not a gamer, so you can just imagine how frustrating it can be to try to jump back into a game you haven't played in months and just get a knack for the controllers again. I think we have like two more chapters left too. I'm going to go bring that up to her when I'm done with this episode, see how she feels about finishing it up. And then last one is Nintendo had an indie showcase yesterday, and I didn't watch it. But I thought it was worth mentioning that it happened. So if you want to go watch it, you can go do that. Maybe I think I'm going to watch it. I just haven't had the chance to watch it. I did not watch it before recording this episode. There might be some cool stuff happening in there. All I know is that they did not announce... what is this game that everybody keeps waiting for? What's the game, P? What's that game? It's the second game. I don't even know. I forget. Oh, man. Something Night. Oh, my God. Whatever. It's escaped me. But if you're a big Nintendo fan, you know what I'm talking about, and you're probably sad that it wasn't there. And that is all I have for y'all today. This is episode 4 of We Talking About Games. This is a good one. It was fun. We had a Google Form submission, which again, y'all, it'll be in the description of all the episodes on YouTube and on podcasts. If you're interested in just joining the conversation, got something to say, you want to give your input on something that happened recently, something that didn't happen, maybe you just want to add something to the conversation, I'm more than happy to talk about it. I'm sitting here talking to myself for an hour, which I still cannot believe that I can do this. I really thought this was going to be difficult, but apparently I know how to fucking ramble. But I'm super interested to hear what you guys have to say too. So if you're watching this on YouTube, leave a comment, like, subscribe to the channel. If you're listening to this on your favorite podcast service, which is still, oddly enough, probably YouTube. YouTube is the number one podcast platform, by the way, guys, which is bananas. But if you're watching this on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anything else, leave some 5 stars. Leave that 5 stars. Leave a review on there, too. I know Spotify has some cool features. I got to look into that stuff. But whatever it is that you can do to interact with the podcast, do that, man. It'll move the podcast up the chain, and I'd love to get this podcast into more ears, so to speak. And yeah, man, I'm gonna leave y'all on that. Go watch Fallout, and look out for that Final Fantasy VII Rebirth review coming in a few days. And with that, I hope y'all have a wonderful day, afternoon, evening, weekday, weekend. Oh, sorry, I gotta start that over again. I fucked that up. I can't believe I fucked that up. I never fucked that up. Anyways, I hope y'all have a wonderful day, afternoon, evening, weekday, weekend, wherever and whenever you might be listening to this. And on that note, deuces.